Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
If you don't know your numbers, you don't know your business. But the problem growing businesses have that keeps them from knowing their number is the hodgepodge of business systems. They have one system for accounting, another for sales, another for inventory, so on and so on. It's just a big, inefficient mess, taking up too much time, too many resources. Introducing NetSuite by Oracle, the business management software that handles every aspect of your business in an easy-to-use cloud platform, giving you the visibility and control you need to grow. With NetSuite, you save time, money, and unneeded headaches by managing finance, sales, accounting, orders, and HR instantly right from your desktop or your phone. That's why NetSuite is the world's number one cloud business system. And right now, NetSuite is offering you valuable insights with a free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profit at netsuite.com/Ingram. That's netsuite.com/Ingraham. To download your free guide, 7 key strategies to grow your profits, go to netsuite.com/Ingram.
Your life, your country. You're listening to the Laura Ingraham Podcast.
All right. Well, one aspect of deep state behavior that has been investigated by the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz, at the Department of Justice. One aspect of that has now been completed. It's concluded with the release of the Inspector General's report just on one aspect of Comey's behavior. And this is the incident where he leaked memos that he had written to the file to a friend of his who then brought them to the New York Times. And remember the way Comey himself described this process when he was asked about it.
You said after you were dismissed, you gave information to a friend so that friend could get that information into the public media.
Correct.
What kind of information did you give to a friend?
The Flynn conversation that the president had asked me to let the Flynn, I mean, I'm forgetting my exact own words, but the conversation in the Oval Office.
So you didn't consider your memo or your sense of that conversation to be a government document. You considered to be somehow your own personal document that you could share with the media as you wanted to?
Correct.
Through a friend?
I understood this to be my recollection recorded of my conversation with the president. As a private citizen, I felt free to share that. I thought it very important to get it out. I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel. And so I asked a close friend of mine to do it.
Well, what the Inspector General concluded in a highly critical memo about Jim Comey said that this set a dangerous example for officials with access to government secrets. Now, this was a fairly lengthy investigation who examined whether Comey had acted inappropriately and, you know, when he gave these memos to his pal. And they said Comey violated FBI policy and the requirements of his FBI employment agreement when he chose this path. So the New York Times title on this piece is Comey is criticized over handling of memos about Trump. They downplay it as much as possible. But he claimed he was going to be vindicated by the Inspector General, that he did nothing wrong, that he handled things the way he had the right to handle them, and that all of this was hyperbole. And so he tweets out, and to all those who spent 2 years talking about me going to jail, ask yourselves why you still trust the people who gave you bad info. Because the Inspector General didn't recommend one way or another any legal action against Comey. So they didn't say he should be investigated or prosecuted for this. He didn't say he shouldn't be. He just didn't make a decision. Just kind of in a way, like you saw Mueller did make a decision and came to no determination about prosecution of anyone connected to, you know, the president himself in his report. So Comey tweets out, the DOJ IG found no evidence that Comey or his attorneys released any of the classified information contained in any of the memos to members of the media. Well, he sent it to his friend. I don't need a public apology from those who defame me, but a quick message with a sorry we lied about you would be nice. Joining us now is Joe DeGeneva. Of course, he's been covering this for, you know, as long as this has been going on, and I'm anxious to hear what he says about this. He joins us now. Joe, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it is a fitting finale to at least part of this awful period in American law and federal law enforcement. It's a scathing report on his conduct as FBI director. Let's remember something. He was the FBI director. This is not some lowly street agent. He is being berated in a scathing tone by the inspector general because he used and leaked these memos for personal and political gain, according to Mr. Horowitz. And he set a dangerous precedent, according to the inspector general, by providing confidential FBI material to the media for personal and political gain. It goes without saying that this is disgraceful in the literal sense of that word. James Comey, however, is beyond being embarrassed or disgraced. He has adopted the tactic of all Democrats, whether they are wearing Klan hats or blackface, that you can get away with anything. And so all we need to know about this is that the inspector general has shown Mr. Comey for what he is, someone who embarrassed the Bureau, embarrassed all the fine men and women who work in that building. Whether or not he will face any legal consequences with regard to this or the FISA documents remains to be seen. But I will say, I really don't care what James Comey thinks. I'm sure he's going to continue to tweet about himself. But all he's doing by tweeting like this is continuing to make himself the glorious fool that he has always been.
Joe, on page 52, I'm reading through the report. On page 52, there's a section called "The Memos Were FBI Records." And he said, Comey told the inspector general that he considered memos 2 through 7 to be his personal documents rather than official FBI records. He said he viewed these memos as a personal aide memoir, like his diary or like his notes. Comey's characterization of the memos as personal records finds no support in the law and is wholly incompatible with the plain language of the statutes, regs, and policies defining FBI records. By definition, federal, and you and I have talked about this, Joe, how many times on TV together? By definition, right. Federal records include all recorded information stemming from your work as a government employee. Everything written down, every text, every tweet, every memo, everything is a government record that should be preserved and not shared. And this is a scathing part going on to page 53 of this report.
He knows that. He's the FBI director. His answers to the inspector general were lies. He knows that those documents were government records. He knew that when he testified to the inspector general. His statements that he thought they were aide memoir is nonsense. What you have is the former FBI director, while he was FBI director, lying and violating all the rules which govern the conduct of everybody else in the FBI building except him. This is truly, again, a remarkable performance, and he will get support from the New York Times and the Washington Post because they have invested in him as an enemy of Trump. But when all is said and done, the people in the FBI building know what an awful person he is, what an ethical disgrace he is, and in my view, he's a criminal.
Yeah, well, so why do you think in the end that the inspector general didn't recommend prosecution one way or another? Because I think you always say, and we have said this before on Fox, that if this were a private citizen, he'd already be doing time.
I think that they concluded that it would be very difficult to prove the intent necessary because of the fact that he gave the documents to a lawyer. It's true he did tell them to give them to the New York Times. I don't think they wanted to go in front of a D.C. jury, which is very anti-Trump, very pro-Democrat. We saw this in the Scooter Libby case with the post-verdict discussions by the jurors. There is great hatred for Trump, and they would view him possibly as a hero for having done this. I'm sure he would take the witness stand. And I just think they didn't feel they could get a conviction. My own view is make him go through the traps. Make him be acquitted. Get a hung jury. Make the SOB. Hire lawyers and go through it.
Well, I think that if the rule of law can be wantonly subverted and violated in this way with no repercussions except an 83-page report that cost us a lot of money, I think it's a travesty. I think it's back to the idea that there's certain people, like a rank and file member of the military, would be serving time right now if they conducted themselves this way.
I agree, and I hope it prompts the president to pardon a lot of people who never should have been charged in Russiagate.
The IG report, page 55, saying that we found it particularly concerning that Comey did not tell anyone from the FBI that he had retained copies of the memos in his personal safe at home. By not immediately reporting that he had provided memo 2 to his attorneys, when Comey first learned that the FBI had designated a small portion of the memo as classified, Comey violated FBI policy. And it goes on and on and on, multiple ways in each section of this report of how he violated bureau policy and the clear standards that he agreed to when he signed on and he swore an oath to uphold.
This is what dirty cops do. James Comey is America's leading dirty cop. He was a dirty cop on July 5th, 2016, when he exonerated Hillary Clinton, and he's been a dirty cop ever since. What he did was he broke the rules, he bent the rules, he created his own rules for himself so he could grandstand and be a hero. He has done grave damage to the FBI. Everybody in that building knows it, and he continues to do it with his arrogant defense of himself. He is a liar, he's a crook, he is a criminal, he is a dirty cop, he is all those things, and he can preen and pretend that he has been exonerated. But every one of us who care about the Department of Justice and the FBI, who love those institutions, will call him what he is, a dirty cop and a liar.
Joe DeGeneva, the question I have, is this just another vindication of Trump for firing him?
Absolutely. He didn't need any vindication from my lights. Article 2 makes him the president.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he can fire anybody, including the chairman of the Fed.
Yeah, absolutely. Get rid of him. But he has every right to do that. But I just think it's another it shows once again that, look, whether it was Jeff Sessions or Jim Mattis or this guy, the Trump administration, I think coming in early, Joe, had really a deficit of understanding of just how dedicated the old guard was to preserving its position of influence and power. And if they had to come in, serve in the cabinet to subvert him, they would do it.
Correct. It's a very sad story. It's a story that history will write. It'd be one of the ugliest chapters in American history when the resistance included members of your cabinet. I'm appalled by some of the things that Mattis has said and others. I respect their service, just like I respect the public service of Bob Mueller as a Marine. I do not respect his service as special counsel. We're allowed to make those distinctions about people. They can be heroes in one context, like John McCain was in Vietnam, and they can be SOBs in another context, like John McCain was as a United States senator. People can understand the difference.
And this goes to, again, the question of credibility and the question of integrity. The integrity of the department and the department's investigative decisions, whether it was the decision not to charge Hillary, the non-indictment press conference, the way they proceeded with the dossier. Well, that information was never part of this report. I imagine that will be handled in the next IG report, correct, regarding
yes.
the FISA court?
Yes. 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 I expect that to be a remarkable document where all four FISA warrants will be found to have been illegal.
Well, and Joe, don't you think, again, with the FISA court, I always wonder, why don't we hear from one of the FISA judges in terms of even as a administrative matter of sanctioning a civil legal matter of sanctioning attorneys who failed to disclose material facts to the court in the application for either a wiretap or surveillance. So it seems to me if you're a FISA judge, you would be livid at this.
You're absolutely right. Now, first of all, because it's a secret court, we don't know everything that went on. Mm-hmm. We do know that the Chief Judge Collier wrote a scathing indictment of the FBI and stopped all contractor access to NSA data back in 2017. But here's the point. Once the FISA report from Michael Horowitz is out, I expect, and I underscore expect, to hear from two people, the Chief Judge of the FISA court, in a statement about what steps they intend to take to punish everyone who had anything to do with the lies that were submitted then. And then second, I want to hear from John Roberts. This is his court. This little SOB had no problem getting in a political fight with the President of the United States publicly about there being no Obama judges,
right,
no Bush judges, no Trump judges. Well, guess what? What about the people who violated the FISA court? What are you going to say about that, Mr. Chief Justice? Let's see your little tongue start wagging about that.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. Do you think Mueller knew all of this when he was investigating?
Absolutely.
So he knew what Comey had done.
Andrew Weissman and Bob Mueller knew all of this. Don't kid yourself. They were part of a coup d'etat. The whole purpose of Mueller was to get the president into an interview and then have him commit up a lie and then say he lied and he should be impeached. When they couldn't get the interview with the president, they folded their tent. And they knew they couldn't get the interview with the president because he would have won in the Supreme Court, because there was no criminal case which required his testimony. Bob Mueller should be ashamed of himself, and Andrew Weissman should be behind bars.
Now, when do you think, I mean, it seems like we should see this second IG report fairly soon, don't you? I mean, they have had a lot of time.
My sentiments are that they're done.
Yep.
And it's pretty shortly going to be in the review process where it's handed to everybody to take a look and make mm-hmm. comments. But I mean, there ain't much more there is to be done. It's pretty clear what happened here. A bunch of people lied to the FISA court. So what's going to happen to them?
Well, again, unless there are two standards of the law for those with a security clearance who happen to hate Trump and everybody else, security clearance, government official, hate Trump, you're okay. If you're a regular person, member of the military, you'd be sunk.
I want a lot of pardons after the FISA report. I want a lot of pardons.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Joe DeGeneva, we love having you on. Give my love to Vicky, please. And just thanks for everything you've done to make all this so understandable and clear to the lay person out there who doesn't really follow the ins and outs of all these legal legal dealings and these reports. It's confusing to a lot of folks for good reason, but you made it really clear. Thank you so much, Joe. I'd like to ask you a question. How did you sleep last night? Did you spend any time tossing and turning only to wake up with a stiff neck, maybe back pain? I'm always on the go, and I know your quality of sleep will affect the quality of your daily life. So if you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, you've got to try Purple Mattress. The Purple Mattress will probably feel different than anything you've ever experienced because it uses this brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. Well, it's not like the memory foam you're used to. It's both firm and soft at the same time, so it keeps everything supported while still feeling really comfortable. Plus, it's breathable, so it keeps you all cool. You're going to love Purple Mattress, and right now, my listeners will receive a free purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. That's in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. And if you're not fully satisfied, after your 100-night risk-free trial, you can return your mattress for a full refund for free. Just text Laura to 84888. That's 84888. The only way to get this free pillow is to text Laura to 84888. Message and data rates apply. They say that home is where the heart is. Well, the reality is that home is where all of your precious belongings are located, where your family lives. So don't you want to protect your most precious investment? So go with the nation's number one smart home security provider, ADT. They provide everything from video doorbells, indoor and outdoor cameras, smart locks and lights, all controlled from the ADT app or the sound of your voice. So peace of mind, priceless. So get a custom designed ADT home security system connected to first responders installed in your home today. Safety, security and protection are just a click away. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. We're going through this report line by line, and it is damning toward Jim Comey, who I think Joe DeGeneva stated it well, is a supercilious jerk, okay, with a haughty, holier-than-thou, I-can-do-anything-I-damn-well-please attitude. And we're going to go through this and the implications of this and other issues of the day now with Victor Davis Hanson, historian, military scholar, of course, author of The Case for Trump, frequent appearances on the Ingram Angle on Fox News. VDH, your quick take on this Inspector General report, which doesn't make any decision about a reference for prosecution, but reading through these 83 pages, oh my goodness, you do have to think that any rank and file member of the military would have already been prosecuted for this.
Yeah, I think they would. And I think what's happening, they're just, as we saw earlier, they're just laying out a whole series of exposures that Comey's liable to. And then it's going to be up to somebody to decide which, if any, are the more persuasive. But when you get into the FISA, of all of the things that Comey did, when you get into the FISA idea and they stamped that thing as verified and they knew in a footnote, they admitted that it was a partisan document and they didn't tell the judge that not only was the evidence for the warrant paid for by Hillary Clinton, but that they had already fired Christopher Steele as unreliable, and that he had been a paid FBI, I guess we'd say, contractor. And they didn't tell the judge that, and that was deliberate. And that just dwarfs anything that Michael Flynn or Papadopoulos or any of these other minor, Roger Stone, were indicted on. So I don't know. I think Comey made a decision, and McCabe has made a decision to play offense. And the idea if they embed themselves within the network, CNN, or they go on MSNBC, same with Brennan and Clapper, and then they write books, they go on tours, they become liberal heartthrobs that they won't be indicted. Or if they were indicted, there would be such progressive outrage that it wouldn't be a secure case. I think that was a wrong strategy myself. I think it just makes people even angrier that they add insult to injury.
Well, it seems to me, again, when you see line after line, he violated FBI policy, the requirements of his employment, disclosing contents of Memo 4 through his friend Richmond to the New York Times. He made public sensitive investigative information related to an ongoing FBI investigation. He wasn't authorized to disclose these statements attributed to President Trump, which Comey viewed as evidence of an alleged attempt to obstruct Flynn. And it goes on to say he clearly considered the contents of Memo 4 highly sensitive. In fact, he even stated this in his congressional testimony in June of 2017. Unlike the Mueller report, this is actually very well written and very clear, easy to follow. So I think connecting the dots on just this aspect of Comey's conduct is simple to do, even for the layman. I don't think it's hard to do.
Yeah, I think most people can realize that if they left the employment of the federal government and they took memos or materials home with them that were written on government machines, on government time, and then they assumed that they belonged to them after they were severed from government employment involuntarily, and then they took those memos that really belonged to the U.S. government and they leaked them to the press for the purposes of exonerating their recent firing or whatever, that they would be indicted. Everybody knows that. And the question is, it's a larger question with Hillary Clinton and Cheryl Mills and Huma Abedin and Loretta Lynch and Andrew McCabe and Brennan and Clark. Everybody knows that if the law were applied across the spectrum to everybody in the way that it should be applied to these people, they would be indicted. But the question apparently is, well, they're too important or they've had so many years of government service Andrew McCarthy wrote a really good essay this morning about it, about McCabe, why he should be indicted, essentially. But he did make the point that, well, McCabe was a long career FBI officer and all that stuff. But I think that makes it even worse that they abuse the public trust.
I agree.
There's something there. There's something there, though, Laura. I don't quite understand what it is, but I don't know why we have this reluctance of saying that James Comey was untruthful, that he was dishonest, that he was unethical, that John Brennan had lied under oath twice to a congressional committee. James Clapper had deliberately misled investigators. Andrew McCabe had been already up for a criminal referral. And we can't make the next logical step that they broke the law, therefore they should be indicted. We can't do that. There's something, I don't quite know what it is. Maybe it's their alignment with progressive thought or the age of mm-hmm. Trump, or they were deemed useful in some existential struggle against Trump. But we're just incapable of saying, you know what, these people were very bad individuals, and they really need to be punished to show people that there is still equality under the law. But we can't get there.
Yeah, so you have the language here. Like I'm reading. Sorry, I'm reading.
Yeah, I did too.
Yeah, I have the language here. So I'm on page 61. Okay, so I've been reading it through the podcast. So on page 61, the Inspector General says, we've previously faulted Comey for acting unilaterally and inconsistent with department policy. Comey's unauthorized disclosure of sensitive law enforcement information about the Flynn investigation merits similar criticism. In a country built on the rule of law, it is of utmost importance that all FBI employees adhere to department and FBI policies, particularly when confronted by what appear to be extraordinary circumstances or compelling personal convictions. Comey had several other lawful options available to him to advocate for an appointment of special counsel, which he told us was his goal in making the disclosure. Yeah. What was not permitted was the unauthorized disclosure of sensitive investigative information. So, like, it's all here. This is all here for everybody to read in this 83-page report. It didn't take me very long to get to 61.
And he already, remember, he said Comey is one of the arguments he's used against Trump and to exonerate himself is that Trump attacked the FBI and he's defending the integrity of the FBI. And in that report, it specifically says that 35,000 FBI people, you really can't expect them to follow the law or to feel that they're law-abiding when the director is so abjectly unethical and immoral. And he set a terrible example for them. That's exactly goes to the heart of Comey's entire defense.
Defense.
That I'm out here on the barricades defending the reputation of the FBI. And the Inspector General, a nonpartisan, apolitical person, says, you know what? You did just the opposite. You just kind of disgraced and let down 35,000 FBI agents. But it's hard for me as a layman to distinguish whether they're making the argument that he's a really, really, really bad guy, but we can't say that you should indict him on this and this, or whether that's going to be interpreted as such as by Barr and the DOJ. I'm hoping they're just taking a deep breath and letting it all get out there and more to come on the FISA, and then they're going to, you know, not be hasty and then just systematically issue some indictments. But It just destroyed that one fell swoop all of these last 2 years of Comey's philosophical tweets and his pictures walking out in the forest and
Near
Eastern Buddhist philosophy stuff and all of those talk show things where he's, you know, I'm this moral superior to everybody. I think it just destroyed that. And he's, I don't know, it's the weirdest thing I've ever seen in any other society like ours. At any other time, he'd be indicted, and he'd be subject to the type of penalties that we said that Flynn was going to be. What Michael Flynn did in comparison, if he did anything in comparison to
James
Comey, is just trivial.
Yeah, the damage that was done by Comey and the government resources that have been used to investigate this and to get to the bottom of this, the personal lives that have been destroyed. Along the way, all of it.
You know, what I don't like about him is this sloppiness and this bragging that he has the right to take memos that belong to the government because
right.
he's the former director. I mean, remember what he also said? He said, you know what? ha, ha, ha. I think he was in a book tour in New York somewhere. And he said, they said, well, how did you get Flynn to testify to your agents without a lawyer? Ha, ha, ha. This administration didn't know what they were doing. They were so chaotic. I always would call the attorney general and get clearance and permission. But with these guys, I ran my agents right around them. Ha, ha. And he thought that was really good that he was able to get the national security advisor off guard without a lawyer by deliberately misinforming him that this is going to be an informal chat and deliberately not apprising the attorney general, which is FBI protocol.
Policy.
He was bragging about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, he thought he really was above the law because he was he's morally superior and he's not of the ilk of Trump. I think a lot of this just goes back to, and it might be simplistic, but blind rage and blind hatred do really crazy things to people. I mean, hatred. And everything that Trump is, Comey looks down on.
No, you're right about that.
And he said he deserves, so Trump deserves it. If you have to go around the policy, go around the government policy. If you have to convince yourself that what you're doing is ethical, then you have to do that. Because he has a duty to save America, I guess, from Trump.
Mm-hmm. I think also we've got a real question to ask ourselves, because when we look at all of these elites, whether it's Epstein or Comey or Brennan or the CNN or MSNBC people have been in all this ethical trouble lately, we have this idea that if you're sober and judicious and you look a particular part and you went to a particular school and you have the right letters after your name, that is equal to morality or wisdom or sobriety, and that people that have a strange accent or they didn't go to college or they're out. And you could really see that when the Dream Team, the All-Stars, the Weissman Group that were partisans and ethnically conflicted went up against Trump's team, Jay Sekulow, Ty Cobb, Dowd. There was this cultural disdain that these guys didn't go to Harvard or Yale, or they were old, or they didn't look young and vigorous. They didn't have the media. And yet the Trump team was far more talented. They had more experience, and they really defeated Weissman. And we've got this idea that somehow elitism is a superficial pedigree or appearance or mannerism, because Comey has it down pat. That he feels that because he looks and acts and sounds the part, we're supposed to think, wow, he's one of these elites that we better hands off. We don't apply the law to them. And they know that. And that's what's really scary, that these people are incompetent. They've done a lot of damage. And when Trump came along, I know he can be coarse and crude. He's got the Queen's accent. He looks in a way that they don't appreciate. But you look at his actual record, whether it's the Iran deal or dealing with North Korea or the economy, he's outperformed all of these so-called elites. And that just creates even greater and greater hatred for him.
I think so. And I think
they have to hate him, because if they don't, it shows you that their whole value system is really warped.
Yeah. And I think
what they value.
Yeah. And I think again, it's so disappointing and depressing that what Joe DeGeneva just said about why the IG wouldn't refer for prosecution. He said this, Victor. He said, well, because Horowitz knows that this gets referred perhaps to, it gets referred to a D.C. federal district court, right? Well, the D.C. jury is going to be overwhelmingly filled with anti-Trump people. And so is it difficult to prove intent? Well, not really here, given the testimony and documentary evidence we have. However, that would be it's a gamble. Maybe Comey is exonerated by a D.C. jury that also hates Trump. Now, that's depressing, right? But you have to consider the venue of the federal district court as to whether someone should be prosecuted. But that's the world we live in today. The judiciary is not unbiased.
All right. And that would be the generous interpretation, Laura.
Yeah.
The more sinister one is that it's not that the judiciary is considered unbiased. It doesn't have to be disinterested because it has higher moral concerns. And Comey, although he broke the law, he really didn't break the moral law, because he he risked his career supposedly against this evil Donald Trump in a way that other people have done. Same thing with it's the sanctuary cities taken to the nth degree. We're so moral in these sanctuary cities, we're not going to obey federal law in the way that, you know, the South didn't right before the Civil War. We're going to nullify them. And when this is kind of a, what Geneva was talking about was jury nullification. And why would they nullify some the evidence? It's because they've been told that they can be more moral, more ethical by ignoring what the law really commands them to do and then appeal to a higher law. And that's pretty much the essence of progressivism today.
Pluto TV is the new leading free streaming television service. Watch over 100 TV channels, thousands of movies on demand, all for free. There's no credit card needed, no sign-up required. Pluto TV is the easy and completely legal way to watch your favorite TV shows and hit movies. So what are you waiting for? Never pay for TV again. Pluto TV is free on all your favorite devices. Download Pluto TV today.
We're talking to Victor Davis Hanson here on the Laura Ingraham podcast. Victor, a couple of other issues I want to hit with you. And we'll hit both of them. There is a report today that the Border Patrol has barred, I guess, Democrat staffers, certain staffers, from being on site and touring Border Patrol facilities because they refuse to abide by clear directives and clear Border Patrol protocol during their visits, have been rude and disruptive to an already very busy and, highly complex and trying process of processing this many people per month. Even though the number's gone down, it's still very, very high. And, of course, the Democrats are screaming about this today, saying, oh, you're trying to hide the real truth of the camps. And thoughts on that?
Well, they've been burned. They had AOC go down there and then fabricate a lie that people were drinking out of the toilets, and that this was analogous to a concentration camp in World War II. And it's the same idea of Rashida Tlaib and Omar going over to Israel and saying, you know, I'm just outraged they won't let me go over there. When we know what they were going to do, that was a foreign version of a domestic psychodrama where they were going to go over there and then broadcast propaganda. And so it's this really puritanical sense of outrage when they get caught doing something unethical. It's really strange. But we know why they're going down there. They're going to go down there and try to get one young child to say that they were mistreated and record it. Or they want to go crawl around a bathroom and say, look at this, there's dirt here. Whatever it is. And they're not going down there to find the problems in the effort to find
help solve it.
You know. They're just not. Everybody knows that.
No, so it's a big political game for them. Another quick issue is the continued attack on American history and the founders, the framers, and even a display of portraits and headshots of people who've won Nobel Prizes. This is at Rockefeller University. And NPR did a report of this. Let's listen.
Leslie Vosshall says the term dude wall was born at Rockefeller University in New York, where she works. Just outside its main auditorium is a wall that's covered with portraits of scientists from the university who've either won the Nobel Prize or a major medical prize that's sometimes called the American Nobel.
100% of them are men. And it's probably 30 headshots of 30 men.
She says a few years ago, TV host Rachel Maddow came there. Vosshall says someone overheard Maddow say,
"What is up with the dude wall?" That was her quote. "What is up with the dude wall?" It just sends the message every day when you walk by it that science consists of old white men.
So they took all the portraits down, Victor, and they find themselves now, I guess, very virtuous, more virtue signaling from the leftists.
It's hard to know whether this is just a parlor game or whether they're serious, because if they're serious, there's a lot of historical precedent from the Ottomans to the Soviets that any time you promote ideology over meritocracy, the society falls apart. What I'm getting at is when they go in for heart surgery, do they say, I want to make sure that this many people of this particular race or ethnic background or gender are on this surgical faculty, or who's going to be in the surgical room? I want to make sure that we have at least two female doctors, or we have at least one Hispanic doctor, or when they fly, when these same people are complaining about, it's easy to complain about 30 pictures on a wall, but when they get on the 747 or Dreamliner on the way home, they say, I just want to know what the ethnic and the gender composition of that crew is. I don't think they do. And so for me, it's, they center on things like the professors of English or pictures on a wall or a mural or Confederate statues, and they virtue signal, as you say, but then in the elemental areas of their own lives, do they want to put their children in a particular school? Do they want to live in a particular neighborhood that's racially diverse, which, as they should, to match reality with rhetoric? And it doesn't ever happen. So you get the impression that this is sort of some kind of cosmic justice where they rail about a global or historical misdemeanor because they can't deal with a felony or a real problem in their midst. Like Bill de Blasio, you know, or Mayor Bloomberg screaming about global warming when they can't get snow out of the streets in the winter and they can't stop the deterioration of civic life in New York. And so I just don't take them seriously because they never apply that ideology, whether it's global warming and being on a private jet or whatever it is, they never apply it to their own personal lives. And everybody knows that. And when they get on their private jets, I don't think they interview pilots and they say, you know what, I have 10 trips planned this year. I want one person that's non-white flying. I want one woman that's flying. They don't do that. They'll probably have two white males in coming out of the military more likely, and they're going to say, I want these pilots on all 10 of them. And yet that's, according to their own ideology, that's discriminatory or it's, you know, disparate impact or something.
And when you listen to the students and others at these schools, well, I think it all becomes a lot clearer and a lot more pathetic.
At Yale School of Medicine, one main building's hallways have 55 portraits. There's 3 white women and 52 white men. Yale medical student Niantara Anderson recently teamed up with a couple colleagues to study the effect of this art.
Students felt like these portraits were not just ancient, historic things that had nothing to do with their contemporary experience, that they actually felt that the portraits reinforced contemporary issues of exclusion, of racial discrimination, of othering.
Othering. Othering.
Yeah, I think one part of it, these are the, I don't know, the neuroticisms of the most pampered, elite, leisured cohort in the history of civilization in these universities, and they don't have to worry about depression or war or real Jim Crow discrimination, so they create these fantasies. And then the other thing is that if they really want to question why somebody gets a Nobel Prize, we've seen what's happened to the Nobel Prize. They've adopted their woke philosophy. Remember during the Iraq War, Jimmy Carter got a Nobel Prize, and the committee said it was because of his opposition to George W. Bush. And then we had Barack Obama, who really joked that he didn't even deserve it. And so when somebody gets a Nobel Peace Prize today, it's considered either it's a race, class, gender selection, or it's an ideological selection. And it's not based entirely on disinterested examination of what somebody's actually done. And that's where we're headed. But if we're going to, it gets back to the original issue. If we're headed that way, I think everybody's going to realize that we're not going to examine merit or competence or achievement or preparation in a way that we did in the past. And in a weird way, Laura, it kind of dovetails with Comey and what we were talking about earlier, that we're not really I'm not talking about degrees. I'm talking about real merit as proven in the workplace and to trial and error. And Comey was not really in a meritocratic sense deserving of that position. He was always, if you look back at his earlier career, if you look back at Mueller's earlier career, they really hadn't deserved the advancement and promotion they had gotten. They had a lot of bad things that they'd done in the past, but it was always, remember, you'd always hear this, I know Bob Mueller. Oh, yeah. Bob Mueller's a great guy.
What did I say? I didn't believe any of that, by the way. I said on my show, I was brutally savage for saying what I said about both Comey and Mueller. I said, I'm always suspicious of people who have to build up somebody else to this level. Maybe I've been around Washington for so long, but I heard the same thing about Wolfowitz and, And the same thing about, you know, Richard Perle and all these people who were these intellects of neoconservative thought. And it turns out they all got Iraq wrong. They all thought it was going to be a 2 or 3 month campaign, war. You know, they were all wrong. And we screwed up the whole Middle East as a result.
Yeah, I just wish that people would actually look at what people have done. So
results.
That's what we heard with it. Remember the Dream Team, the All-Stars?
Oh, God.
We were told that this Wiseman, 13, 16, how many were lawyers? And when you actually looked at them.
Yeah, vicious
some of them
lawyers.
They defended the Clinton Foundation. They yep. have been involved in defending Clinton employees. They were all conflicted. They had mm-hmm. donated the maximum donation, meeting the maximum donation limit. And anybody from Mars would have said, "What is Mueller crazy? He stocked this with young, woke, partisan, biased lawyers." And then, yet we had to hear, "Well, that's Bob Mueller, old Bob Mueller." I thought, yeah, this is the Bob Mueller who didn't do too well in Boston, didn't do too well with the anthrax thing. Yeah. And I just didn't get it. And then Jim Comey, and I thought, wow, this is Jim Comey that gave 3 different press conferences right in the heat of a political campaign. And same thing with Loretta Lynch. I've known Loretta Lynch for years. This is a woman who met on a tarmac with Bill Clinton. And I think that's if people get really angry about the rise of Donald Trump, but Donald Trump represents what we're talking about. People just have had it with this bankrupt elite that self-references itself constantly.
Well, it's the same thing with McCain. Remember when?
Yeah.
God rest his soul. God, we know his suffering for our country in Vietnam. We celebrate that he gave so much to this country. And I had many dealings with him when he was just fantastic. But it doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything he says or does, or that he's infallible. None of us are. We all screw up and make mistakes. And Trump, remember when he criticized him and they said Trump's over. And anyone who has known or is a talk radio host knew that was BS, because a lot of people didn't like McCain. And a lot of people did, but a lot of people didn't.
I agree with you. As soon as I heard it, I said he's not over, because people had forgotten that a day before John McCain had said that Trump brought all the crazies out of the woodwork. Remember that?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Trump was responding to that. And then when you look at the Steele dossier, and a McCain aide was trafficking in that and trying to spread it, and McCain was called on, he said, you know, you go to hell. And he campaigned in the primary that he was going to be the guy to repeal Obamacare. And then out of personal spite to Donald Trump, he, casting that vote, destroyed any chance of repealing or improving Obamacare. And so I'm like you, I admire his military service, his political tenure, but there were things within the last 5 years, especially, I'm not going to get back to the Keating pie and all that, that was less than stellar. And I'll go a little further. I was really appalled by the funeral, because I thought it was sort of like the Paul Wellstone funeral that the Democrats did.
Hitting Trump, the Bushes, speeches, it was all.
Yeah.
But I think, Victor, we'll let you go in a second, but I think in 2020, everyone's saying, look at all these polls, battleground polls, Trump's losing by 9 points. You know, Drudge has all this stuff posted. Drudge just seems to have turned, you know, really against Trump and the Trump administration, and I don't quite know why. But the amazing thing is, I think it's actually gotten worse for people who support Trump in a way that's going to help Trump. Because I think people now feel that they really can't say anything about anything without being called a racist. And I think that pisses people off. And this little professor, this professor at that medical school we were talking about with the Nobel laureate's pictures coming down. He said, when I lectured at Brigham Women's Bornstein Auditorium walls, they were adorned with portraits of prior luminaries of medicine and surgery, connecting to a glorious past. Now all are gone. Hope everyone's happy. I'm not. Neither were those asked, but afraid to say openly. Sad. See, people are afraid, but when they go into that voting booth, I don't think they're afraid. They can vote for whomever they want. So that's what
they
I'm
can.
Hoping for.
And these people are not going to saying that they're centrist like Hillary Clinton did. They're not going to do that, or Barack Obama did in 2008. They're abject neo-socialists and socialists. And so they're not also going to say, I can vote in privacy, but they're all going to think Trump is the only thing between me and socialism. Because what you hear on those debate stages, we haven't heard, even in 1972, I can remember from George McGovern, and I think a lot of people are going to say, whatever Trump is, he's not New Green Deal, he's not infanticide, he's not reparations, he's not a wealth tax, he's not free college tuition, Medicare for everybody, free health care for illegal aliens, open borders. And Trump's been given a great gift in his opposition and the people who hate him, because they're absolutely unhinged. And I was thinking the other day, if Joe Biden had just had to take that Montreal cognitive assessment test that everybody said Trump needed to take, and he aced it 30 out of 30 questions, they should say, you know what, now let's see Joe Biden take it. And I looked at that test. I don't think Joe Biden could pass it. It's just off the cuff.
Poor guy. He needs
Yeah, I feel bad for him. But what I'm getting at is the opposition to Donald Trump has scared people just as much as the hatred of the left, and they don't see a viable alternative. I've talked to a lot of independents, centrists, and they may not have originally been for Trump, but they will vote for him because they don't see any alternative.
No, I think, again, the Bill Kristol, Max Boot, Jennifer Rubin, they have about 10 people in a party that has essentially a 90% approval rating for the president. Republicans, they represent no one. And I think they know that if Trump wins re-election, it's, the final nail in their coffin. And everyone knows it. I think it's patently obvious. Victor, we love having you on the Ingram Angle. Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of our sponsors who are supporting this show: ADT Home Security, Pluto TV, Purple Mattress, and NetSuite. Remember, America now and forever on the Laura Ingram Podcast.